Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Conservative, constitutional. It's the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, keeping you informed on what's going on right here in Kentucky.
Today on the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, the KREF reports were due this week. For those of you who are unaware, KREF stands for the Kentucky Registry of Election Finance. And when candidates at the state level run for office, anywhere in the state, pretty much if you're not running for Congress, federal senator, or president, you have to file with this office reports that at certain times, and these reports detail how much money you as a candidate have raised, how much you've spent, what you've spent it on, who's giving it to you. And these KREF reports can tell us some really interesting stories about candidates. And if you know what to look for, if you know who the players are, you know how to see the story that's being told in the financial side of things, you can begin to understand how the political picture is going to shape up over the next month. You can't, I wouldn't make bets on it per se, but you do get some idea of who's pacing right, who's not, who's got an outside chance and who doesn't, based upon what you're seeing. But you need to have a trained eye to look at it. And, well, you don't need to yourself have learned that trained eye. No, you listen to the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, where I've ran for office statewide, locally. I've gone through this. I've filled out KREF reports myself, signed my name to quite a few. And so I certainly understand what's going on here. And all that I ask in return for the knowledge I give you is that you share the show with others. You subscribe if you're listening to this. If you're listening on the podcast format, leave a review. Just do anything you can to help promote the show. I certainly would appreciate it. And we'll also be going through today some interesting stories that we can tell from the KREF reports. And that's House District 91 is one of those. There's something strange brewing and House District 91's race. I mentioned this race earlier on this year because some of the interesting endorsements coming early on, but with KREF reports and others, supports having been more public, it's worth us revisiting this race and explain exactly what's going on. So we'll have all that and more today on the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, where it is, as always, a wonderful, wonderful day. And if you want to check out old shows, head on over to theandrewshow.com, hit the Listen Now page. And if you want to reach out to the show, you can hit the contact tab on theandrewshow.com or email me at info@theandrewshow.com. But before we go into KREF reports, I do want to visit a stories that we're seeing of schools cutting electives, such as Jefferson County Public Schools cutting transportation, Fayette County schools cutting electives, other districts I'm seeing news that they are cutting electives, leaving some to wonder why does it seem like schools are running out of money when they're getting even more from property taxes and more from state funding. I mean, take the state funding, for example. The state uses something called the SEEK Fund and the SEEK funding formula. Basically, how it works is there's an appropriation out of the general fund into the SEEK Fund, and it's an amount per student. And each district per student that shows up, they're paid based on showing up. So if your kids aren't showing up every single day, well, then that affects your SEEK funding, obviously. But per student in the school district, they get an amount of money from the state. And the legislature this year has increased SEEK funding yet again. They're actually are spending and increasing school funding more than they almost ever have before. But just how much more is our state handing out to these school districts? Well, for comparison, let's look at 2019 to 2020 school year. And that's an important year in this discussion. And that will become apparent later on why I'm zeroing in on the 2019 school year. So in the 2019-2020 school year, the SEEK formula was paying out $3,590 per student per year. That's just the state funding. Remember, your local districts, depending on where you live, are spending anywhere between $12,000, $13,000, all the way up if you're in Louisville, to $23,000 a student. But this is the portion that the state is directly kicking in per student funding. Now they kick in other ways too as well, transportation funding. And as such, we'll have that later on. Of course, you have federal funding, local property taxes. You have a fund that they have that offsets areas that have low property valuations in order to help their schools funding. So we have all that going into play here. But just to seek formula. So they do give more than this, but to seek formula is the main source of funding. And if we adjust that $3,590 per student from 2019 for inflation, because of course we've had Joe Biden as president during that time, so we got to adjust it for inflation, then that would be $4,300 for this upcoming year, about that. Well, for this upcoming year, the legislature has actually set aside $4,326 a student and $4,556 for the following year. So, adjusted for inflation, they're $3,590 per student from 2019. They're funding more than that, and will fund more. But that's not all. See, the legislature has also kicked in not just more to SEEK, but also more to transportation. In prior years, including 2019, the legislature had been funding at only about 70% of what a school's transportation cost is. They have a separate line item for the transportation funding outside the SEEK formula. And so the schools... Now, though, the legislature has committed and set aside enough to fund 100% of expected transportation costs. And so schools are saving millions there. And that's getting well above the inflation rates of revenues from the state. So they're getting more than they were getting in 2019, even adjusted for inflation. But yet we still are seeing strange stories from school districts. Let's take one of our larger school districts in Kentucky, Fayette County Schools, that's Lexington. In 2019, the approved general fund for the Fayette County Schools was $580 million, which adjusted for inflation would be about $719 million today. And if we can, I just want to take a second here that we can reflect on how depressing it is. I have to adjust for inflation for just like 4 years ago, and it's a significant amount too. I mean, it went from $580 million to $719 million adjusted for inflation. That is a massive percentage-wise increase. That's massive amounts of money increase, and it's pretty depressing. And you have to wonder if your own salary has gone up by that same amount. Of course not. But that's what we have to look forward to Joe Biden's inflation. But anyways, putting that to the side. So the budget then for this last year would be adjusted for inflation, $719 million for Fayette County Public Schools in order to keep the same funding. Well, according to the budget that they're looking at for this 2023 year, they're right at $720 million. So they have more SEEK money coming in than before, more transportation money coming in than before. Their overall budgets, their general fund budgets are pretty much in line following inflation. So why is Fayette County Schools and basically all other school districts across the state claiming that they need to make sudden and much needed cut to electives? Where's the funding that's disappearing? Well, the reason why I zeroed in on the 2019 school year is because they're claiming that they need to make the cuts from their budgets due to the fact that the COVID dollars from the federal government is drying up and now it's time to tighten their belts. But that's a claim that seems kind of odd. It doesn't hold much water. And if you don't know why, I'll be explaining that right after this short break. I'm coming up on a commercial break here for you radio listeners. But if you do want to reach out to the show as a reminder, head on over to theandrewshow.com. You can also email info@theandrewshow.com. Reach out by email. If you've got story suggestions too, that's one thing. I do appreciate people message me suggestions. And it does help out as I'm going through things. Gives me things to talk about. Plus, it lets me know what you all are seeing out there and helps you help others stay informed. If you're seeing something important in your area, you want others to know about it, right? So go ahead and send those over to info@theandrewshow.com as well. But we'll be back here in a few short minutes. And you're back with the Andrew Cooper Writer Show. Before the break, we're going over how all the schools are saying, a lot of the schools, we are giving the exact example of Fayette County schools, but we're seeing this in, of course, Jefferson County Public Schools in Louisville, Lexington, other surrounding school districts saying that they've got to cut electives, they got to tighten the belt, they got to cut transportation because they can't make ends meet. And they claim it's because the federal dollar bills coming in from the COVID pandemic have dried up and they can no longer afford to operate. But wait a second here. I thought COVID money was for pandemic relief, to be able to afford things like interior upgrades, HVAC filtration, to buy masks, to provide to the students, extra cleaning services, contact tracing, testing, vaccination pushes, all those things. Yet the pandemic is definitely over. Schools are no longer doing basically any of those services. They're not requiring masks, social distancing in the classrooms, not talking about upgrading their HVAC filtration systems, building up little plastic barriers around school desks, paying for subs at higher rates because the teachers are out more due to their COVID infections. So wouldn't the funding that, as I illustrated in the last segment, has been keeping up with inflation be able to keep everything going that was there before? I mean, taking for an example, Fayette County Public Schools, what's something that they say they're openly looking to cut? Well, one of those things is the school newspaper at Henry Clay High School, a school newspaper that has been around since 1919. So literally over 100 years. For over 100 years, they've been able to fund this paper perfectly fine, but somehow, because you're not getting your COVID vig anymore from the federal government, you just can't afford it. Spending that was supposed to be used for pandemic issues and spending, a pandemic we're essentially no longer in, a pandemic that has legally ended over a year ago. So why can't you afford your school paper anymore? What has that money been funding that wasn't there before that somehow suddenly needs the money from the 100-year-old newspaper? Because they could afford it before, but then COVID money came in and they've been spending it on something that now they have to keep going that they don't have the money for, so they got to cut back on things they used to pay for all the time. Well, when it comes to Fayette County schools and many of these other school districts, we don't really have to dig too far. Because perhaps it's the, I don't know, all the extra admin waste that our schools have saw fit to add in over the last 4 years. Admins added to fight this invisible phantom of racism that's just running rampant somehow in our schools to push diversity, equity, inclusion. You know, these admins that most important job has been to hang up their trans flags so people feel seen. And I'm not making this up. This isn't an invisible thing that I'm pointing at. I can give you examples. Taking Fayette County schools, again, that's who we're zeroing in on since they say they can't fund a 100-year-old newspaper here. In 2022, they formed something called the Equity Council Committee. The committee then formed LGBTQ leaders, racism leads, to go out to all the schools in order to implement their diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging plan. And I mean, you know, we must really, really need this council. It's clearly very, very important because without it, how would we have entire school board members and other admins have to sit through a diversity and anti-racism training because one of the school board members committed the great microaggression of saying that he didn't want to see anybody monkeying around with a budget. That's a real thing that actually happened. One of the school board members in a budget meeting said that he wanted nobody to be monkeying around with a budget. Monkeying around with something is a phrase that's been around for quite some time, has no racial connotations to it at all. But the diversity committee, the equity committee, saw fit to label that as a microaggression and mandate all board members and some admins have to sit through a training. So in conclusion, school districts like Fayette County Public Schools are cutting art classes, 100-year-old newspapers, and many other things that have been a part of schools for quite some time. In order to maintain the practice of your kids sitting around in circles and talking about their feelings, their sexuality, and how racist they are. But hey, sure, your kid won't possibly now discover their passion in art or journalism or graphic design or engineering, all electives that are on the chopping block. But the trade-off is you don't have to worry about a board member saying the phrase monkeying around with a budget. That seems like a fair trade now, doesn't it? Huh. Doesn't seem that fair at all. In other news, KREF reports have come out, and I explained what this was at the top, but these are the financial reports for the candidates running for state-level offices, and we see something really interesting coming out of the 91st District. The 91st District is in the Madison County, Powell County kind of area there, and we see that rate going on. It's kind of central southern Kentucky. The seat is currently held by Bill Wesley, but you have a challenger by the name of Daryl Billings, who had ran against Wesley in the past, didn't do too well, but suddenly he's enjoying a lot of financial and vocal support from the political establishment, including endorsements from two congressmen and support from two constitutional officers. And when this occurs together, when you have a incumbent that's been there a little bit of while, not too long, but he's been there a few years. When you have an incumbent and a challenger receiving this kind of level of support, and incumbent not getting as much, them feeling safe giving that vocal support, you have to have two factors coming together at the same time. And you understand these factors are what we're seeing is going to help inform us on who we should support in this race. So what are the two factors we have? Well, first we have the incumbent has to have upset the establishment somehow, some way. He has to have made it clear that he's not exactly their guy anymore. And the establishment leadership has thought, you know what, maybe it would be better for us to move on. Now, Bill Wesley, some of you may know exactly who it is. Some of you may not know exactly who he is. I've talked to about him a few times, maybe on this show, but he doesn't come up often because he's not super publicly forward as a critic of the Republican leadership or critical of, very publicly critical of the Republican establishment as individuals in the state. And he's not vocally hostile as someone like Doan, because you see the establishment falling out of their good graces is pretty easy. It's pretty simple and straightforward to end up on their bad side. You don't have to just be openly hostile like maybe somebody like Steve Doan. I'm not going to say he's hostile, but he's willing to point out that leadership needs to change and he's willing to do things on the floor. And Wesley's done things on the floor as well, but he's not as openly saying, hey, we need to axe these people and we need to get rid of Osborne and some of the other members of leadership and move on. No, but Bill Wesley has somehow ended up on their bad side. So it leaves us to ask, what could he have done over the past 2 years to call him to fall out of favor to those in leadership that they'd be willing to even entertain possibly supporting his opponent, or at least allowing others, giving the green light for others amongst the establishment, the political cadre to go ahead and throw such support behind his opponent. Well, if we rewind to the COVID era, we will see Bill Wesley being very vocal regarding the mandates and the power grab by the government. In fact, he actually made a post that raised some eyebrows back in the day that I think might explain some of why the establishment got very uncomfortable with him. Reading now from a chunk of that. Mandates for masks and vaccines, the House bills and Senate bills we passed this last session is law. This man that is in a governor's position and whoever is following him is breaking the law, trying to force people to wear a mask or be forced to take a vaccine. House Bill 1, Senate Bill 1, Senate Bill 2, and House Joint Resolution 77 protects Kentuckians, and we are going to fight back against any school, business, or any other that follows these foolish mandates. We've had enough, and we will not abide by this any longer. It was a post that Representative Bill Wesley made on his social media. Clearly, being very forward, we don't have to exactly guess on where he falls there. Paints a clear picture. And then in 2022, he was reportedly reamed by leadership several times for comments and the pushes he was making on bills to ban vaccine mandates and masks. Now, why was leadership so upset about that? Well, same reason why leadership in 2021 decided to form a DEI council called the Standing Committee on Race and Access to Equal Opportunity, something that only a very far left legislature would do, but yet they ended up doing. It's the same reason, because you have to remember that for our current leadership, politics is a game, and just that. There is no realization that their decisions actually affect other people, affect their lives. And it's not only them who think this way, but many, many Republican elected people, Republican groups, women's clubs, Republican women's clubs, etc. They just sit around gossiping, deciding about whether or not to support someone based upon their personal feelings or how their friend personally feels about them, whether or not they like them, whether or not they think they are nice enough. Not based upon what their actual views are, their votes are, no, but about how they personally feel about them, because they stick their heads in the sand many of these times and don't realize how their actions and who they support will have consequences off into the future with everyone else when they make laws and policy. And we have to keep this mindset of many politicians in mind, the kind of the sports team mindset, as we dissect what exactly is happening here in the 91st District. But we'll be digging more into that after this short break. You're listening to the Andrew Kubrater Show. We'll be back in a few short minutes. And you're back with the Andrew Kubrater Show. Before the break, we've been digging into the House District 91 race, Bill Wesley versus a Darryl Billings. Bill Wesley, the incumbent, talking about how Darryl Billings getting the support he is shows us there's been two factors that have entered this race. I'm going over the first factor is, and that's that Bill Wesley has ended up on the bad side of the political establishment. We're looking at why. We talked about his views on vaccine mandates and mask mandates, and he was very publicly forward where he was fighting against those, very, very public in his statements. And we had to understand that leadership is constantly worried that they, the caucus, won't just lose seats as a caucus, but that leadership may lose their own seats if they're forced to take votes or do things that they view as controversial. And if they're not gaining any seats either, they're worried that they're going to lose power. And so Bill Wesley making public statements or going against something that's maybe the current belief system, because when he was making statements about vaccine mandates and mask mandates, it was at a time where some people still erroneously believe that these things were not only okay to do by government, that masks and vaccines were our key to ending the pandemic. We have to understand that that is a completely different mindset than people like me and hopefully you. Because I personally don't care if us getting conservative things done ends up losing us 10 or so, maybe even 15 seats in the House right now. It would be perfectly acceptable to me if that means we can get conservative things done, because we have 80-81% of the seats in both chambers. And at this point, honestly, I don't believe if we do conservative things, it's going to lose us seats to begin with. Because if we look at why Democrats are losing so much and it goes over to the Republicans, it's because they've lost their ever-loving minds. They're crazy. And so if we're doing the opposite of them, not only do I think we're not going to lose a whole lot of seats, but we're going to produce a lot more conservative Kentucky moving forward, which actually might lead to us being able to pick up even more seats into the future. But because the establishment is just so worried to jump, that if it's not perfectly neutral, if it's something at all that anybody's got an opinion on, they're afraid to do it. Well, having a person like Bill Wesley coming out there and talking about kinds of things that they think are too iffy to talk about, making Republicans look bad. Well, they think it's might end up costing them some seats. So Bill has affected them there. But what really started getting the financial powers now to go against Bill Wesley is his vote surrounding HHR, gray machines, and sports betting. So historical horse racing, for those of you who are unaware, it's a process of how they decide how to operate those slot machines you see at the horse parks. And HHR was unconstitutional. It was not allowed, according to our Constitution, according to the laws that were passed. And the state Supreme Court had weighed in saying, look, unless the legislature passes some laws specifically allowing HHR to happen, those slot machines, the horse parks can't keep having them. And so what the legislature did is they came in and they went ahead and they billed them out. Why? Because, well, the horse parks had already built up these HHR machines and they had already attracted in quote-unquote jobs, but more importantly, revenues that wasn't coming in before, and they were paying out those revenues in a taxation scheme the same as the horse betting taxation scheme. So the state was also bringing in millions off the machines. And well, the legislature couldn't have that, so they wanted to go ahead and pass HHR. Now, Bill Wesley voted against that because he said, look, they did this without approval. They knew it was illegal. They did it anyways. It wasn't up for question. Literally every single state Supreme Court justice voted against this. So why are we going to reward these horse parks by okaying something that they are illegally doing and just saying, oh, that's okay, we'll just say it's okay? But then you have now the gray machines that came up in 2023. And the gray machines are those skilled games that were in, you know, gas stations and bars. And Bill Wesley said the argument against them by the establishment now that, remember, voted yes on HHR was, well, they're violating the law. First off, it's a lot less clear that they were violating the law. That's why they're called gray machines. Second off, if you were fine with HHR, who was clearly violating the law and okaying them, that reasoning for not okaying now and creating a taxing scheme for gray machines makes no sense. And more importantly, that was hoping the small local mom and pop's businesses. So Bill Wesley voted yes on the gray machines. But then the sports betting vote came up, and Bill Wesley, recognizing that one, continuing to bet, being able to bet on your mobile devices was a lot more damaging to people than going up to the gas station or bars and being able to gamble on gray machines. On top of that, he didn't like how the horse parks were continuing to flow the sports betting through. Then they would get to touch every single dollar of sports betting that went on in the state. And he didn't like that. And so he voted no. And so those three votes together over the course of 2 years is what upset the establishment powers even more so now, because his prior vocal conservativeness was maybe threatening the coffers they believed. But now voting against the horse park mafias, well, that was now threatening leadership's financial enforcement that they use in order to continue to maintain power. Because you see, they flow money from the horse parks into the candidates they want to see win. And they flow money in to punish those who go against them. But if the horse park mafia see that they can't have control of their caucus or there's too many ruckus causers, well, that will threaten leadership's ability to maintain power themselves. And they may say, look, you got to have somebody who can do a better job here. And so they need Bill Wesley gone. So he's been greenlit for removal. Now, that would explain why some of the groups that may be financing his opponent are doing it. But it doesn't explain everything that's going on here. I mean, if we look at House District 69, you have incumbent Steve Doan in Northern Kentucky, which has been very vocal against his fight against the establishment. He's even come onto the show saying that, you know, we need to look at possibly replacing some members of leadership here, changing the rules. He voted the same way on these bills as well. But his opponent, maybe she's getting the PAC support from the teachers' unions, the horse parks, and the hospitals. But personally, she hasn't garnered that many public endorsements from establishment members or money. I mean, according to her KRF report filed this week, she has only raised $3,600, with $2,500 of that coming from the Chamber PAC and Adam Koenig, the old holder of House District 69 that Doan beat 2 years ago. That's not exactly a stellar raise for her at all. But when we look at Darrell Billings, Wesley's opponent, what do we see? He's garnered some pretty public endorsements from people like Barr and Comer, as well as two Republican constitutional officers. And on top of that, he's raised around $66,000, including money from high-profile donors like Kelly Kraft and her husband. And what's even more fascinating about this support is that Bill Wesley has supported Andy Barr in the past. He has supported Kelly Kraft when she's running for governor. Barr's PAC has even given money to Bill Wesley in the past. So it's not just that Wesley's been greenlit, but that Darrell Billings must have some political juice he's now cashing in on. So it's worth us looking at who Darrell Billings is politically and why he's garnering this much support. Is he a stellar conservative, a longtime Republican operator? Is he heavily financially interested? Is he a very conservative person? Everyone's like, oh, this will be a much better Republican over Bill Wesley. Well, no, not exactly. He's not a long-term Republican operator. However, he is a long-term political operator. And how do we know that? Well, we need but look at his prior years here in Kentucky, who he's politically supporting. What do we see? We see Democrats he's been given money to just in the past few years. We look at his social media, we see Democrats running for state house that he's pushed and shared their post of and has publicly supported. He's given money to quite a lot of interesting people, and that starts to paint the picture of just who Darrell Billings is and who he is in this race, why he's gathering the kind of odd support he is. So we'll have that. We'll cover that a little more in depth after this short break. You're listening to The Andrew Cooperrider Show, your source for Kentucky politics. As always, if you want to reach out to the show, feel free to email info@theandrewshow.com. Once again, that's info@theandrewshow.com. And you're back here in this final segment of The Andrew Cooperrider Show. We've been digging into House District 91, a fascinating and interesting race between Bill Wesley and Darrell Billings, with Wesley being the incumbent who's managed to upset the Republican establishment, so he's been greenlit for removal, but that doesn't explain all of Darrell Billings' support. He's getting a lot of support from a lot of establishment actors, and so we ask, why is that? Well, it's because what we see is he's been a long-term political actor. In 2023, he gave money to Richard Henderson, who ran as an independent against Republican Greg Elkins in the special election that occurred in the Mount Sterling area, taking over for former Senator Ralph Alvarado when he stepped down to go work in Tennessee as their director of public health. Richard Henderson, though, what's interesting is he was just before that a Democrat who Billings has also donated money to when he was a registered Democrat. And Richard Henderson only changed to an independent because he's trying to win that race and believed the D next to his name would be a negative thing. Darrell Billings has recently given money to Democrat judge executives, Rocky Atkins, which is Amy Beshear's top aide. He gave money to Steve Beshear. He gave money to the Democrat House Caucus Campaign Committee. I mean, many of these Democrat donations are like within the past 2 years or so. But it's not that Darrell's just given money to Democrats. He's also given money to Republicans. That's how we know that Darrell is just simply a political operator. He isn't conservative any more than he's a Republican or a Democrat. He's a politician first and foremost. And what he cares about is collecting favors. He cares about collecting favors from both sides of the aisle. He doesn't actually care about the policies they're putting this in place. I don't know the guy personally. I don't know his political philosophy, but I really don't need to hear what he has to say when I can see his history before me, his history on social media, and also his history on donations. Because if you're not just a political operator who's trying to collect up favors, how do you donate $1,000 to a Democrat and then 2 days later donate $2,000 to a Republican? Something he really did do in late 2022. He literally gave $1,000 to a registered Democrat running an election, and then 2 days later gave $2,000 to a registered Republican running an election. It's not because you believe in an ideology that falls along party lines, which means you certainly have no strong feelings about things like being pro-life. I mean, how can you? You donate to both Democrats and Republicans. You have no strong, hard feelings about gun rights and the Second Amendment. How can you? You donate to both Democrats and Republicans. You really have no strong feelings then about fiscal policy and taxation outside of maybe the policies that directly affect you and your business personally. I mean, how can you when we look at what your political history is, who you've vocally supported, who you've given money to? What Daryl shows us about himself is he's somebody who seems to be a pretty savvy political operator who spent the last several years building a pretty impressive contact list within his phone, building up favors with important political players. And with the political influence and flux we've seen in Kentucky over the past 10 years or so, it's no wonder that he's had to play both sides of the aisle if you're him. I mean, power is shifting from one party to another. Because remember, Republicans had never had control of our state house until 2017. It's less than 10 years ago. Until 2017. And before that, you had Republicans, of course, since 99, having control of the Senate. But even after Republicans grab control of the House, we've seen Eastern Kentucky still elect Democrats kind of locally, South and Southeastern Kentucky, Central South. We've seen them, even though they're ruby red conservative, quote unquote, conservative counties, they still will vote for Democrats locally, at least. And in the House, that is kind of held out. But it's clear that that area is shifting red, even for their local elections. So if you're a political player, you've been playing both sides of the aisle and shifting from one party to the other, you got to hedge your bets here. So you have two things going on at the same time in House District 91's race. You have an incumbent who's been greenlit by the establishment for removal, and you have a political operator who's trying to cash in on all his relationship building, monetary giving, and favor banking in order to finally win an election. So who do you vote for? Who do you support if you live in the district? Well, it depends on what you personally are looking for. Because on one hand, you have an incumbent that the actions of the political establishment has, if anything, pushed more towards the anti-establishment side. Someone whose votes in the future will be even more principled based on even more conservative beliefs and probably will be a lot more vocal. I mean, he's been voting pretty well already, but they're pushing him to become even more outwardly vocal. It's inevitable that will happen. They did the same thing to Josh Calloway. Because you see, Josh Calloway was kind of quiet. He probably before 2023-ish took some votes. I think he looks back on and says, you know what? I probably shouldn't have voted that way. Now that I realize some of what I realized when I was a newer representative, I didn't know quite what was going on. I trusted people I shouldn't have. But what happened to him was he stood up in 2023 and said, hey, I'm going to stand up for children. I don't understand why we as conservatives can't get things done on some of these issues as far as gender transitioning on kids and so on and so forth. And so I'm going to stand up on the floor and make an impassioned speech imploring my fellow conservatives, or people who tell themselves they're conservatives, but fellow Republicans, to do something. And he proposed some amendments that the leadership of the House wasn't too sanguine with. They didn't like, and so they were defeated. But it's because of the speech he made, much the same way in 2024, because of the speech he made, we got some one conservative thing done. But because of the speech he made, it kind of backed leadership into a corner where they had to allow Senate Bill 150 to pass in 2023 with everything it did, ending gender transition surgeries and hormones for minors in Kentucky. But through that process where they stripped him of committees for standing up for children, Josh Calloway was forced to become a lot more vocal because he realized that he's on the bad side of leadership, even though he wasn't even trying to go against leadership. He was just standing up for something he believed in. And now Bill is finding himself in the same boat. He has stood up for something he believes in, not because he hates leadership, just because he believes in something and now has ended up on the wrong side. And he will likely become now a much more vocal fighter if he stays in. So you know that when it comes down to the hard votes, the principled votes, the votes where it's about what's going to pad the campaign accounts, what's going to appease leadership and the establishment versus what is for the people, what's for your principles, your conservativeness, Constitution, when it comes down to those votes, he's going to end up voting the right way a lot more often and won't be bought off. On the other hand, You have your choice of Billings, who is a political operator. And if anything, might bring in a little more bacon back to the district. Maybe you get that playground built you want to get done, or maybe that road gets widened that Bill Wesley maybe wasn't as able to get the state to pay for because the establishment he wasn't on the good side of and leadership, so they didn't put it in the budget bill for him because, well, you know, I mean, he'll still bring back money for the district. They have to, but maybe not some of the extra things that somebody like Billings could get done. But hey, what's the cost of those things, of getting that road widened, that new scoreboard in that school, that new park? Well, it may only cost us our state and, on a large scale, our country's future if we continue to vote that way, if we continue to vote in the people who care more about you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, than about the ramifications for the decisions. And how will that affect us into our future? What will we have left when they leave office? Will we have a better future? Or will we be looking at a much more grimmer outcome here in Kentucky? Well, that's all I've got time for today. We'll have a lot more interesting primaries to go through tomorrow. So I do want to encourage you to tune in. I've just scratched the surface of talking about some of the primaries that we need to discuss over this next about a month or so, 3 weeks until Election Day here in Kentucky. It's an incredibly important one. I want to encourage you to tune in every day and encourage others to be tuning into the Andrew Cooperwriter Show. I appreciate it. As always, if you want to reach out to the show, head on over to theandrewshow.com. Hit that contact tab. Jeez, I've been a mumble mouth today. Contact tab. And reach out. Let me know what you think, what you feel. I don't care what you feel. Let me know what you think, though. And remember to be sharing this with others. You have a great rest of your day.